Welcome to Chair Chat, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. Let's talk a little bit about the perception of candidates and probably even the perception of state chairs. And most people look at state chairs and look at some of the Democratic candidates and think, oh, they're well off. These are affluent people. They don't understand the problems that I have each and every day to put food on the table and what have you. But many of us, many of our candidates have gone through the same type of human experiences that impact all of the working folks. Can some of you guys give us, Allison and I, we had a conversation about student loans mm-hmm. and the importance of the programs and grants for student loan performance.
Right. My mom was one of eight children, and we had nothing. She had nothing growing up. My father grew up in an orphanage, and I was told, your job as a child is to grow up and go to college so that you can provide for yourself. The issue was, of course, we had no money for me to go to college on. And so my mother would actually take out 90-day loans to help cover the costs at home so that we could pay the tuition. And fortunately, I went to a state school in Florida, Florida State University, go Noles. And and I had student loans. And it was through that I was able to, I'm the first one in my family, my mother was one of eight, to go to college. And I only had that opportunity because of the student loan program, and that's an opportunity that we as Democrats want for everybody. And this isn't just the I've got mine club that the Republicans espouse. We want every person to have the same opportunity, a good public school education, completely educated in public schools, and my children are in public schools right now in Florida. And if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to grow up, go to work in the Florida legislature, go on to become an advocate and be where I am right now. I'm very grateful for that. And that is something that Democrats espouse. That's one of our core values.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Patsy, I know you want to say something.
I was just going to say, as a teacher, I was raised in a middle-class family. I had public education and all of that. So I had the advantage. But my late husband went back to school to become a physician's assistant. And to do that, he had to do 1,000 hours of hands-on care, and so in a hospital. So he was an orderly. So he was an orderly getting paid almost nothing. I was a teacher. And our two children qualified for reduced lunch. And I say that just to say that this is what we do to our teachers. Of course, this was a long time ago. But, this is how we treat our teachers, that we don't pay them enough, that their own children, are on free or reduced lunch. That's ridiculous. So how do we expect our teachers to want to go into the profession, to be able to succeed? This is my problem with what's happening with public education right now. Teachers are used as a pawn. We talk about, we give lip service to how much we care about teachers and we respect teachers. We don't. And we take away their pay, we take away their support systems. And this is what has to change. This is what gives me the passion to do what I'm doing, mm-hmm. to see what happened to public education in four short years in North Carolina. Mm. And that's why I'm here today.
Well, and it goes back to something that Karen said earlier, which talked about the hypocrisy of Republican rhetoric these days. Because if you'd listen to Nikki Haley and Tim Scott here in South Carolina, they are for the public education system. Tim Scott's for fighting for the working class people. But we know that he voted against the farm bill, which had the SNAP program in it.
Oh, yeah.
We also know that he voted against extending the student loan programs and the legislation for that. But yet he's saying, and he was a beneficiary of those programs, but yet he's voting against it. How do we, and what can we do in order to call out that hypocrisy? What do we need? Are there tools that we don't currently have as state parties, or is there something that we need from our national party to begin to highlight the hypocrisy that's going on right now?
I just want to tell a little story and then I'll go into that, because it really does I think it's less of us having to explain who we are and pointing out who actual Republicans are, right? So during the fight to expand Medicaid in Tennessee, it was called Insure Tennessee. So during the fight to pass Insure Tennessee, we had seven Republican senators sitting in a committee meeting that blocked it, right? They never even got to a full floor vote. The main paper in the state came out a couple of weeks later and said, these seven senators, along with this whole list of all of our other elected legislators at the state level, they get access to affordable health care because they were elected officials, right? So what happened at that point is that the Republicans went crazy, right? They said, how dare the paper print that? This is a, this is an invasion of our privacy. I mean, there were no medical records being printed. It was basically our tax dollars are subsidizing their health care. Democrats, on the other hand, and there's one in the audience, one of our state senators, Sarah Kyle, is here. What they said is, yes, you know what? We do have access to affordable health care. Thank you. And that's what we want for everyone, mm-hmm. right? And so our legislators, first of all, I call it the give them enough rope theory, right? So, so the Republicans basically are hanging themselves in our state legislature, luckily. But our Democrats are also standing up and saying, yes, you know, they're admitting that, yes, we do get it. This is who we are. But this is the opportunity for all that we want for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it's by our actions and by what we're fighting for that really explains to the people who we are and who they are. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to say about, you know, one of the things we're trying to do in Tennessee is not bite off more than we can chew, right? So we're lucky we don't have to worry about statewide races in 2016. So we're going to go for, you know, we're going to target some state house and state senate races. And so it's more important for us to get out into the voters in those house and senate districts specifically, what their incumbents are doing and how they're voting, rather than blast it out statewide. So we're using our county parties to help us do that, right? So in Upper West Tennessee, the county parties up there are using what happens in the state legislature and blasting it out to the voters in that area, because that's how you soften those targets, right? Instead, because we've been biting off more than we could chew for too long. We just don't have those kinds of resources. So being targeted in what races we're going after, as well as, you know, even when it comes to communicating what our values are, being targeted with that too. So, I think you said it, you know, best. We have to make incremental gains. They didn't win all at once. You know, they beat us, you know, one election at a time, one election cycle at a time, and we just have to do the same thing. I often say, if I wake up on election day and we have won two state House seats and two state Senate seats, I'll be like popping the champagne, right? Like I know it doesn't sound like very much, but in a state like Tennessee, where we've just been losing cycle after cycle after cycle, that's huge.
I think we've got to create some more "the hell you say" moments. That's what I've been working on. You know, when they talk about the social issues, yeah. They were talking about pro-life or, you know, pro-choice. And then in Georgia, I had to tell you're talking about how to get white guys' attention. I say, well, guys, you know, they're trying to restrict your wife's access to birth control.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And they say, "The hell you say." We've got to create those moments to get their attention.
Yeah.
In a way that means, on policy issues that are relevant to them. Mm-hmm. And we've got to create that, not just in that area, but we've got to create it in education. You know, why is our technical school half the size it was before this Republican governor? Because he cut the Hope Scholarship. Well, the hell you say. You know, we've got to create those moments where the light bulb comes on of what they have done. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, it's got to be incremental, but I think we've got to create, because they're giving it to us, how do we make it in a way that illuminates it to them in front of them?
Exactly.
To have them react of, "to hell you say" moments.
Yeah, I totally
agree.
That's
what we've got to get to.
I agree with DuBose. I think, you know, we've got to have courageous voices articulating our values.
Right.
Voices of values, and they have to be non-traditional messengers. People that you talk to in the grocery store, me going to Monroe, Louisiana, even if I'm, you know, being repetitive and trying to push a message, is just not going to work. And so making sure that our surrogates, not just in campaigns, have a message and they're ready with it outside of election cycles is important. Now, in Georgia, they might say, the hell you say. In Louisiana, we say, no way, Shay. No way, Shay. No way, Shay.
Whatever works.
Whatever slows your boat.
You know, Jamie, maybe that's one of the things we need to do is develop that message and start doing a little brainwashing of our own.
Yeah.
You know, sharing it where it works in the southern states. And, you know, financially, in West Virginia, I know we could use some help from national. Nothing against you, but, you know, it probably costs more to run a mayor's race in Atlanta than a little help we could get in West Virginia.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think, and I know Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the committee is, there was a commission to review what happened after the last election, are going to come out with some recommendations soon about how you grow Southern parties. And I'm looking forward to hearing that. And I know they want, part of it I've heard early on is investing more in the party infrastructure. But there's one big issue that I think is looming. If you take a look at, just recently, I think in February, the Center for American Progress came out with this huge report which talked about when states will move from majority white states to majority minority states. Mm-hmm. And it talks about several of your states. I shared data with you in 2028 and 2040 and 2050, many states in the South mm-hmm. will start to flip and become majority minority states. So demographics, on demographics alone, that means then Democrats have a chance. But the issue and the problem is that millennials, this new generation of folks that are here in society, agree with us on the issues, but aren't so much aligned with us in terms of the party. How do we change that?
That's where messaging, I think, is very important, critically important. So that's what we've got to focus on, is educating them and messaging appropriately to them.
So messaging, messengers?
Mm-hmm. Not having our meetings at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. I mean, yeah. I'm serious, right? Like, it's the other thing I noticed going around to all the different county parties is that they're having the same meeting at the same place, and it's the same business meeting where there's a lot of bickering going on, and nobody wants to go to that. So I was at a room full of college Democrats last night, and I was asking them, like, what can we do? How can we attract folks into the party now? I was like, Snapchat? You know, I don't know. And apparently I learned of something called Yik Yak, which I thought they were making it up, but it's actually a thing. But meeting them halfway and asking them what will bring them in. One of the things they told me last night was, you know, the people in this room are interested in being professionals, right, in their political science majors. So a campaign training, a campaign 101 training, out in maybe a regional college training, right? You get the people first that are interested, give them the tools so they can influence their peers, right? That's probably, instead of us trying to figure it out and going one-on-one with the young people, let's figure out what the, you know, how the young people who are already active could bring their own folks in.
And to your point, Mary, I think internships mm-hmm. and mentorship, yeah. And the third point is training them to become that next generation of leaders. We take that role very seriously at our party. We've got no less than 15 interns mm-hmm. working at the party at any given time. And so that mentorship is really important. Somebody was there for me, yeah. And I'm always trying to make sure when somebody's calling or emailing and saying, you know, Chair Peterson, can I come and just, you know, follow you and hang out with you for a day and learn what you do? That's really, really important for exposure. We've got to make sure that we have some folks behind us to continue the progress.
I agree. That's actually how I started out. I was an intern. Governor Graham, who was our governor then, had an internship program for, I think he probably had 20 to 30 students, college kids. And that's how I even got my feet wet in politics. And we at the party have a fellows program as well as internship programs. And we also have the HOPE program, which is all about our young people. And the whole point is to train them to be campaign operatives, mm-hmm. finance staff, that's really hard. Obviously, we're based in a college town, so it's a little easier for us because we can draw from the colleges, but we are very serious about that and growing our young, developing our young, and then setting them loose in the real world so that, and promoting them when they have the opportunity.
I can tell you something that we are announcing actually today, And we have some of them, and I don't know if any of them are in the room at the, today, but we are announcing our James E. Clyburn Political Fellowship here in the state of South Carolina. And we have selected, the goal was to select one young person from every county in the state. So we were modeling it after Howard Dean's 50 state strategy. It was our 46 county strategy. And that's because when I went out on the campaign trail last cycle, this isn't to be derogatory to my seniors, but the average age of the folks that were on the phone making calls, knocking doors, were 55, 60 plus in some of the counties. And folks, you know, 10 years from now, you know, those folks aren't going to be on the phone and out in that hot sun knocking on the door. And so we needed to start to invest. And I also heard the complaint, and I'm sure you get this complaint all the time, particularly those of you who are swing states, that I'm tired of these young people coming in from all these other states, and they don't know who we are. They don't know what's going on. And so I was tired of hearing that complaint from some of our county folks that we didn't have young people from the areas developing talent there so they could be campaign operatives, or they could be the next chair of a county party, or that they could actually be a candidate. So we have selected 39 young people will announce and highlight tonight in tonight's program who will begin a year-long training to be either a campaign operative, to run for office themselves, or to be a county party officer. Awesome. And so we're really excited about that. Yeah. So with that, I know we are pretty much run out of time, but I wanted to give each one of you just a few seconds to give us your parting thought about the New South and what you are doing specifically, or what you see that we can all do together to begin to make that vision an actual reality. So I'll start with Mary.
I started last time.
Oh, well, we'll start now.
I'm totally kidding. I want to talk a little bit more about the elephant in the room that you talked about before, which is how the parties and the makeup of the southern states is changing. I think what we have to do is spend, you know, maybe some less time trying to get some of the folks back into the party who left when Barack Obama was elected, and actually spend more time on doing outreach to the rising American electorate that we've heard so much about, those folks that are actually going to change the makeup of the state. The makeup of Tennessee might not change till 2030, but if we don't do outreach to the Latino community and to other communities of color, to the LGBT community, to, you know, single women of all races, that's huge, could be huge for the Democratic Party. If we don't do that now, then we could be, and young people, we could be ceding some of that ground to the Republican Party, and we certainly don't want them to get there before we do.
Thank you, Linda?
Our big goal is just candidate recruitment. You know, finding the right candidates, getting the ballot full, which will in turn help bring more voters out. And that, along with strengthening county parties, we're gonna get this Democrat Party back, and before it goes backwards too soon.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Belinda. DeBose?
Well, we're closer than people think.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
And in Georgia, you know, last cycle, when you had these wonderful candidates, Michelle Nunn and Jason Carr at the top of our ticket, and they talk about the 6-point spread and how far Democrats mind. No, it's really just 3 points to get 50%. We're pretty dang close. Mm-hmm. And if you move our base stronger, and progressive whites and Hispanics and young people just a little bit, you're at 50% in Georgia.
There you go.
This year, in the presidential race, it can happen now.
Right.
If we start talking about things that mean something to every family, and we have some hell you say moments. Thank you.
Thank you, DeVos. Karen?
So I just want to say thank you, Jamie, for putting this together. This is certainly a great conversation. I'd start with saying if we could have this conversation in each one of our states, I think we might be able to continue to build. And so let's try to do that as chairs and to have the message resonate that we're here, we're active, and we're ready to mobilize. What we need is inspirational and motivational, courageous leaders, people who are gonna talk, have real talk, and tell people the truth. highlight and call out the hypocrisy on the other side, so that we can articulate the contrast between them and us. And it won't happen, as Allison said, overnight. It's going to take time, but I'm here to tell you, in 2 weeks, keep watching. And as a result of 7.5 years of calling Bobby Jindal out for his failed policies, it's not about his personality. It's about his failed policies that didn't move Louisiana forward. If you do that in your state, in the South, over time, people will begin to listen. That is why the Republican lieutenant governor 2 days ago endorsed the Democratic candidate.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Exactly. It can happen. Don't stop pushing. Keep pushing, and we're going to see change.
Thank you.
I want to go back to something that Mary said in terms of the millennials and the meetings that we have at 8 o'clock in the morning. We need to change the way we embrace our young people, our millennials, and there needs to be more fun. We need to remember that it's fun to work together for something that really matters as much as our political values matter. And so put a little bit of fun into it. And I love your idea about the pipeline, and you told me about that a few meetings ago, and I think North Carolina's going to share your wisdom. So thank you. That's a great idea, and vice versa.
Thank you.
Well, I'm very optimistic. I feel like we are on the cusp of greatness and return. It's not maybe going to happen as fast as all of us want it to, but I feel very, very excited about the future. Demographics are coming our way, and as I have a good friend who says, not a damn thing wrong with the Democratic Party that a good candidate won't fix, and I believe that, and we've spent a lot of time focused on really quality candidates recruitment in our state, and I'm very excited about the folks we have coming up and running, and I think that what you're doing in Louisiana is exactly right. Part of our jobs is to hold the Republicans accounted for every hell you say moment that they do, and we do that every day. And I do think the cumulative is going to turn the tide. And I'm just excited to be in this boat with all of you. And I'm excited about opportunities we have at all of our DNC and ASDC meetings to get together and like working together in a collaborative group.
Great. Well, I want to thank you all again for being here with me. It's just been an honor to have so many of my colleagues here. And I want to thank all of you for being here. I hope we have created a conversation about the South that will continue, as Karen said, in all of our individual states. And to my audience for Chair Chats, I want to thank you, because you're always welcome on Chair Chats. Thank you, guys.
On the next Chair Chats,
forget changing the world. I made the mistake coming out of law school thinking I was going to transform the world when I realized the most important thing I can do is live by my values, transform myself, and then maybe that will ripple out and change the world.